from places that we can't see, and get that stuff into the jail.
But if the law passes, it could face legal challenges, according to Devin Lee of the State Public Defender's Office. She says a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling known as Florence v. Burlington upheld the right for police to strip search anyone entering a jail. But Lee says the ruling made clear that searches can only be visual. Under Wisconsin law, police are allowed to touch a suspect during the strip search.
The Supreme Court said, we don't know that we would have come down this way on this case if we were talking about anything outside of visual-only searches. So if we're going to leave the law in Wisconsin that we can do physical strip searches, then we are outside, I think, the purview of the Florence case.
The Public Defender's Office has called for changes to the bill to better protect the rights of inmates from unreasonable searches. Gilman Halstead, Wisconsin Public Radio.
100,000 Wisconsinites have an extra 3 months to sign up for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act before they lose their state-funded insurance. The state Senate passed the bill yesterday. Governor Walker says he'll sign it today. Democrats objected to a provision that makes 83,000 adults under the poverty line wait until March 31st to get Badger Care Plus for the first time. That's how the state will pay for the delay, and it will save $23 million in the process. Walker says next year all Wisconsinites living in poverty will be covered under Medicaid for the first time, with no more waiting lists and no more enrollment caps. As for the 3-month delay, Walker blames the federal government and its glitches with the healthcare.gov registration website. This is Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin-Superior, celebrating 35 years providing distance learning education in Wisconsin and beyond. Information on programs and more is at uwsuper.edu/dl. Support also comes from Fisher King Winery, downtown Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, offering handcrafted artisan wines produced on-site from locally grown Wisconsin grapes. More at fisherkingwinery.com.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio with two guests from different political perspectives who are ready to discuss the top issues in the news this week with each other and with you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are going to talk about freedom of speech and Native American mascots. Also talking about whether freedom of speech is under siege based on the suspension of a reality TV star for the remarks he made about gays and blacks. We'll talk about whether it would be a good idea or not to eliminate the income tax in Wisconsin and whether the federal budget deal that passed in the U.S. Senate this week was a good deal or not, plus other top stories in the news this week. We will move from story to story in the Week in Review as we always do, so call in early if a story interests you. But let me also encourage you to call in with the issue that you would like to discuss. You can introduce a topic. What happened in the news this week that mattered most to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So let me welcome our two guests. Two guests who served in the state legislature together, and now they are doing other things. Margaret Farrow is a Republican, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, and a member of the UW System Board of Regents. Good morning, Margaret Farrow.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good, and I hope that stay safe. Don't break a leg today.
We're going to try hard, but I have to come out to Madison for a meeting just in a little bit of time.
Yeah, we are. The freezing rain advisory extended until 3 p.m., causing some travel issues and closing some schools, and be safe. Louis Fortas is with us, former Democratic state lawmaker, former economics professor, and editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. Good morning, Louis Fortas.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Lou. How are you today?
Well, and yourself?
Good. Well, let's start with Governor Walker signing this bill yesterday that would make it harder to force a Wisconsin school to drop a Native American mascot or team name. He suggested that schools had a First Amendment right to choose their own team names.
If I could personally take care of this, I'd go and change these mascots and these nicknames because I have great empathy for the concern they have. By the same token, I just think from a free speech standpoint, granted it's not individuals, it's collectively a school district, so it's a collection of individuals. that free speech shouldn't be limited to just speech we agree with.
The old law would have prompted an evaluation or a review if one person complained about a school that had its team name, the Indians, or another race-based name, and the school would have to prove it was not discriminatory. The new law that was signed yesterday requires 10% of a district to sign a petition calling for a review before there would be an evaluation. The old law had the Department of Instruction making the call. The new law has the Department of Administration deciding. Native American groups had urged the governor to veto the bill, saying that Indian nicknames are hurtful and discriminatory. The governor disagreed and said that if the state clamps down on mascots, it could later lead to efforts like banning some subjects in the classroom. So, Margaret Farrow, do you agree with the governor on this issue?
Well, not surprisingly, I do agree with him. But the reason is, I think, because the way I feel look at it, and I think I respect and understand the fact that he's speaking as a proponent for freedom of speech, and I agree with that. But this country is always based on the majority with protection of the minority. In this case, to have one person be able to trigger this kind of a process that was in the original bill passed in 2010, I believe, that gets down to less than a almost representative minority. The other process, the old bill had the Department of Public Instruction being both the prosecutor making the determination, yes, there's a problem, and the judge. Now I know there's a problem. Now I'll decide what to do. This bill puts it in a more orderly fashion, and it's 10% of the student body of the school district that is the number that would be tagged to have proponents of this type of effort to get rid of a mascot come forward. I know many. There's different ones around the state. Some have changed their mascot already in these several years. But the community of Mequonico, for example, the entire community beyond just the school has this historic emblem. They feel it is very definitely history of that area and who originally was there. And I know we see numbers from all our 11 tribes, but I don't think there is unanimity in the way they resent it. Respectfully, if you have a Native American emblem, mascot or what have you, that is respectful of the heritage, it's different than the point that could be made if it was something that was too much of a caricature and too much of a almost denigrating presence.
Louis Fortas, your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm certainly intrigued by the fact that Governor Walker signed this because of his concern about free speech. When you look at how the people demonstrating around the Capitol were treated a couple years ago, and how what his views of free speech were when they were circling the Capitol and being concerned about the way he was governing. So the free speech thing, I'm glad that he now respects free speech, but I think it's a little late to the game. But the important thing is this: why is this so important? I mean, why is this? You know, it's some if this is some effort to, you know, stand their ground or whatever. I mean, it's really sad. People, you know, that you know, insensitive or insecure or whatever, that they're going to fight over something like this. If changing the name is going to, you know, kind of alleviate more the you know, discrimination and the disrespect that certain minorities get, I mean, isn't that worth it? And you know, the. The issue that Margaret was saying about, you know, one person in the past could trigger it. I mean, if you are concerned about, and there's always a few people in every, as Margaret knows, in every assembly district that, you know, is going to fight over everything and anything. But, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, make it 25 people. I mean, put a little bit of a burden on the people who want to see the change. But, you know, don't talk about 10% of the, you know, district population. I mean, that's really, really a high barrier.
Yeah, and it might be. It might have been the student body, but still,
it's the student population. Mm-hmm. And Lou, you know that in some districts, 25 is 10% of the district, because there are a number of our school districts in the state that have 250 children total in the district. Mm-hmm. So
I appreciate that. And but still, I'm saying, I mean, you wrote legislation. I wrote legislation. I mean, if you wanna deal with that issue, you know, put a little bit of a barrier there. I mean, make it 25, make it 10, make it a certain percent, but not, you know, not 10%. I mean, that's, I think that's a pretty difficult number to reach. The other thing is the current legislature has oftentimes made decisions as to who would be the decision maker by who's currently in that office. And right now you have a Democrat as the in the Department of Public Instruction, and now they're moving it to the Department of Administration. Well, you know, in the future there is going to be a Democratic governor and sometime, and hopefully soon. But you don't want to make policy on who's currently in that position. You want to make policy for what is right for the long term for the state. Those are some of the concerns I have.
Well, why do you suppose Governor Walker waited until the 11th hour to sign this bill, Margaret Farrell? Why didn't he just, you know, sign it right away? There was a lot of speculation that, you know, that this might become one of those automatic laws because he didn't sign it.
Right. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know his schedule. He has a killer schedule. If you look at his calendar for the past several weeks, he's been all over the state. I know every now and then headlines are written if he ventures outside the state and gives a speech somewhere. But if you look at the headlines around the state, he has been everywhere talking primarily about economic development, talking about education and education opportunities. I don't know why he went up to the later than the 11th hour, almost to the 12th hour, to sign it. I know that he listens to a lot of people. I remember Governor Warren Knowles, the story was always told that he would call people into his office and make an effort to find out from people why they thought he shouldn't sign the bill. He would want to have people pushing him back like that. I think all governors have their style of how they do this. And I think for many, getting the bill signed is quite pomp and circumstance, depending, of course, upon the bill. But I'm not sure why he went that way. But he certainly was listening to people all along, and he was all over the state listening.
Let me get a caller in. Jim in Milwaukee. Hello, Jim.
Hello. Yes, I think he's on the right track, making it so that not just one person could make an issue about the, you know, mascot. I think that he's going a little overboard with the amount of people that have to make an issue for it to change. But to be honest, I personally do not believe that this is about just the mascot. I mean, right now he's shooting to decide if he can have a casino put up in Kenosha. This would be a very powerful political move for him in the future. So I'm seeing this as just more of a little gamesmanship on his and trying to get people to realize they need to either get along or, you know, he's going to do what he can to make things unpleasant.
All right, Jim, Governor Walker did say in an interview this week that he is not likely to make a decision on the Kenosha Casino until mid-2014. Louis Fortas, do you think the casino has anything to do with this bill?
I'm not sure. I really don't know. I don't know who he's talking to and who he's kind of listening to, more important. So I don't know.
Yeah. Any comment on why the governor took so long to make his feelings known on this particular legislation?
Oh, God, I think he was uncomfortable with this. I think that I don't think it's a, if you raise the barrier from one person to, you know, 10 or 20, whatever, so you have a little bit of a barrier there, I don't know how any kind of sensitive human being can be, you know, opposed to people having a chance, you know, an easier chance to challenge it. So I think he's uncomfortable with what he did, but I also think he's looking at the future for himself. And making decisions on what's good for his future. And I think he saw this as something that's important for his future, not necessarily the state's future.
We are going to talk about another issue where free speech rights have come up this week. Talk about the Duck Dynasty controversy after this break. And we'll welcome your your comments on that particular story. Do you think A&E, the cable TV network, was right or wrong by suspending the Duck Dynasty star for making offensive comments about blacks and gays? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll also talk about the federal budget being passed and the possibility of eliminating the state income tax and much more. Here on the Weekend Review on the Ideas Network.
I'm Dr. Zorba Pastor, and I'll be hosting a WPR Food, Wine, and Art Lover's Journey to Barcelona and the south of France this coming May. We'll travel from May 3rd through the 15th, exploring the Mediterranean diet, Roman ruins, country markets, and some of the world's most treasured artwork. Private museum tours, wine tastings, and all the charm of the Mediterranean climate, lush scenery, and cuisine. More details and a full trip itinerary at WPR.org/travel.
Support for WPR comes from listeners like you who make sustaining gifts. Your sustaining membership informs and entertains more than 200,000 people every day. Thank you. And if you're not a sustainer, become one. Go to WPR.org and click donate.
Take Wisconsin Public Radio on the go wherever you go. Listen to our live broadcasts, our archived programs, and the latest from WPR News. Go to WPR.org/mobile app to download.
Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up this afternoon, it's Central Time. And Mike Arnold will be in for Rob Ferret. Mike and Veronica Rickert will get some tips on how to be more resilient. They'll check in on the day's news, and they'll learn how to make figgy pudding. What's figgy pudding? We'll find out after 5 on Central Time. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top state, national, and international news stories of the week. Our guests today are Louis Fortas, a former Democratic state lawmaker, former economics professor, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, and Margaret Farrell, also a former state lawmaker, former Republican lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, currently a member of the UW System Board of Regents. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org if you would like to talk about the issue in the news this week that mattered most to you. Let's talk about the outcry by many conservatives saying that free speech rights are under attack because the star or one of the stars of the Duck Dynasty reality show was suspended indefinitely by A&E, the cable network that runs this reality show, for making offensive comments about blacks and gays. There's even talk of a boycott of A&E until this this star is reinstated. Louis Fortas, was A&E right or wrong by suspending this Duck Dynasty star? And are we infringing on people's freedom of speech rights?
I know. I think they did the right thing. And, you know, if this person wants to go out in the street and stand there and make his racist and reactionary statements, you know, that's free speech. But when you're on, you know, television and you're doing it, I think there's a greater responsibility. And I just don't think, you know, we have a place for that in our discourse. But it's very interesting. The people that are crying about the free speech, these are the same people who are all upset if somebody uses a swear word on radio or television. There's, you know, big fines for that and all. But, you know, those words, which aren't hurting anyone, those swear words, those are, you know, a terrible free, those are terrible and they should be eliminated according to these folks. But something that is hurtful can cause, you know, violence, you know, racial statements and racial, you know, basically profiling these comments can create violence against minorities or gays and lesbians. That in their eyes is fine speech, but a swear word is bad speech. I mean, these folks are not looking at this as a free speech. They're just looking, they're angry people, and that's sad.
Margaret Farrell, your thoughts on this this controversy over, was A&E right or wrong by this?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, we know A&E is a company. A company is, you know, in the business to make money and to provide entertainment in this case. they have a contract with this, I guess it's family. I've never watched the show. I have. I know a lot of people who do talk about it. And I guess I want to kind of take off on Lou's reaction to it because, and I somewhat agree, there is, I believe, a lessening of the level of our culture being shown in our media. Swear words now are almost, or profanities are almost daily. I mean, it's become almost part of the vernacular that people use on both radio and television, and where the FCC used to almost, you know, have a apoplexy over someone using a swear word. We have let our language slip down into that, and many people are very comfortable that never before outside of, I won't say where we could find it because then I will sound like someone pointing fingers. But I think we've kind of lessened the whole culture. The sensationalism of cable news, 24/7, we have to always have something happening that we're going to make a sensational story about or bring someone's personality to the head and make it, you know, try to sensationalize it. I think all of this has been kind of fanning the flames of now, as you said, the reality TV situation that for the last several years has been commanding the highest numbers of viewers and what have you. So I think A&E has created this situation in a way by what they are wanting to do to try to raise their numbers and get higher viewership. In this case, now I've heard the audio of what was said. He wasn't comparing, I thought, as well as just categorizing some things that were of a nature. But he puts the things together that people said. He then drew a comparison between them. I guess I didn't see it that way, but that's my own reading on it. But the issue is they've got the coming series that's about to start for the season done already, and this fella is part of it. So I don't know what they're going to do with the show because they can't very well just airbrush him out of those scenes. So I think the media as a whole and cable companies are the ones that are creating this, and now they have to live with what they've created in this controversy.
Let me get a couple of callers back-to-back who have different views on this, and then we'll get some more comments from our guests. Dave in Menominee, your thoughts on this?
Hi, good morning. This, again, is just false outrage from the right, you know, and the feeling of being a persecuted Christian, and, you know, this big aura of being persecuted. The First Amendment does not guarantee us to have a TV show, doesn't guarantee us to say whatever we want on TV. It does not guarantee that. It guarantees that the government cannot stop me from saying whatever I want. This is a business thing, like the guest had said. And that company can keep them, A&E can keep them on that show. And I'm sure they're weighing up, you know, money against, you know, offending people. I just think that, you know, these are the same people that try to that are trying to suppress what people can say during the holidays. You know, these are the same people that are complaining about free speech at the same time on the same network telling us certain words that we have to say during the holidays.
Yeah, all right, Dave, thanks very much. I want to point out that Sarah Palin posted a picture on her Facebook page of her with the reality show clan, the Duck Dynasty clan, with the message, "Free speech is an endangered species." And Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal released a statement saying, "It's a messed up situation when Miley Cyrus gets a laugh and Phil Robertson gets suspended." The show is filmed in Louisiana or videotaped. Gail in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Gail.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that this man was being interviewed by a magazine, and he answered the question honestly, and he was giving his religious beliefs as far as the gay issue. And our First Amendment is most powerful when we're hearing something that we don't agree with. He might not be a very articulate man, but I think he still has the right to answer the question honestly.
Yeah, he did answer the question, but A&E suspended him Gail? Are you saying that?
Right, but I don't think he has to, that he's held to a higher standard. He's not a politician. He's not really even a leader. He's a duck hunter. Yeah. You know, I mean, and for him, this might have been a very high-level question. And again, he was going back to his religious beliefs. I believe the guy is a bigot, but we can have bigots in America, and we should be able to speak honestly and not worry about being fired from our job.
Thank you very much, Gail. I won't go into every last detail, but when asked what in his mind is sinful, Phil Robertson replied, "Start with the homosexual behavior and just morph out from there. Bestiality, sleeping around with this woman and that woman and that woman and those men." I went on to also say that, quoting some biblical reference, that gays were not going to get into heaven. He also said when he was asked, he talked about civil rights. I never with my eyes saw the mistreatment of any black person, not once. Where we lived was all farmers. The blacks worked for the farmers. I hoed cotton with them. I'm with the blacks because we are white trash. We are going across the field. They're singing and they're happy. I never heard one of them, one black person, say, "I tell you what, these doggone white people," not a word. So Louis Fortas, he's just talking about his religious beliefs, and A&E should have just left it at that. Everybody knows that these duck hunters from down south are going to have conservative religious beliefs.
And again, if he wants to go out in the street and stand on the street and say whatever he wants, he has that right to do that. And I would defend his right to speak and not be harassed by the police or the government for doing that. But I think, I agree with Margaret on the fact that do we really need to become cruder and basically less civilized in our discourse? What you see with the cable networks, the 24-hour cable networks, as again Margaret points out, that it's gotten nasty. They're really pandering, and that's sad. It's just not good for our culture.
Yeah. Margaret, do the conservative groups that are trying to boycott A&E and the conservative politicians who are speaking out against A&E, do you agree with that?
Well, each of them can do their own thing, and they all have to look at the marketplace. We often have Planned Parenthood, boycotting certain products or certain things if something happens from the other side. I mean, all groups, and I use them as one of many, on both sides of issues that attempt to do that type of market and dollar control as a result. But I guess the thing that we have to realize, as much as Lewis and I found out when we were in the legislature, this is a very, very different state from one corner to the other. The people, the beliefs, the culture, the background, the history, the ethnic groups, including our Native Americans, that our kids don't get enough information about because they don't have written history. They have traditions and oral history. There's so much within our state. Then you go out to the Fed, to the whole scene of the country. This gentleman and this family come from a part of the country that we in Wisconsin would not identify. I mean, would say, wow, did we know something that was the way people live? Yes, they do. Now, he's talking about working in the fields alongside blacks. That's different than any of the other civil rights people maybe ever experienced on either side of the issue. It's a varied country. This is putting a magnifying glass on it with this reality show. He was speaking off the show. He was speaking in an interview. I don't know what's going to happen. I think they're sitting in a stoop.
Well, let's move on to some other issues. The U.S. Senate this week did pass the bipartisan federal budget deal. Was this a good deal or not, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I'm relieved that that we have a budget, a federal budget. We haven't had one for a while, or an appropriations bill that has passed in a timely way. I think both sides, both houses, are to be applauded for what happened. Many of us have very strong
philosophical and policy views. And yet, as a country, as we are, and as legislators, legislative bodies, one ideology cannot rule if you are reflecting all of your population. And what you end up with, as we often hear, is sausage being made, and it's messy when it's being made, and when it's finished, well, most people like the finished product but don't really want to see how it happens. And that means you've got a lot of different ingredients going into it. Any ingredient on its own doesn't taste good. Put too much pepper in anything and you're not going to be a happy person. My point is you have to kind of sift and winnow to get to the finished product. For an ideologue to say, oh, no, we should not have done anything without getting more taxes on one side or getting more control of spending on the other side of the issues. We are a representative republic, and we have democratic bodies. I think it finally showed its face again in Washington, and I credit everyone, beginning with, of course, our own congressman who pushed this and did this, and the senator who worked with them. They both deserve credit. Their caucuses deserve credit, and the body does.
Louis Fortas, so what do you think of this deal?
I think it's a good deal. I think it's a small deal, but I think it's a good deal. I think it's a movement in the right direction. There was bipartisanship. There was some effort to actually work together, and I think they were smart for starting at, you know, saying what can we kind of agree on, and let's work in that area, and let's just leave some of the stuff that we don't agree on for a later date. And you know, I think that's you slowly build trust, you slowly begin to work together. I mean, Margaret and I, when we served in the assembly, there was split government. The governor was Republican, and the both houses were Democratic, and we did work together. I was in a majority. I don't know if Margaret feels the same way, but I thought, we worked together. Sure, the majority had more influence in the legislature, but the governor was certainly pushing back on his side, empowering the minority in the legislature. So I mean, things got worked out, and we actually got along. I mean, and I like Margaret, it's a different world.
We came in together in the class of 86, but you're right. I mean, look at – and Governor Thompson was a strong leader who had been a veteran of the legislative process but knew how to work with the other side of the aisle. I keep reminding people, Luce, that our first budget, we cut the income tax rates in Wisconsin in half, and only one of them has changed slightly to go up since then. With Governor Doyle's last budget, the very top rate – half of what it used to be is slightly higher than it was before, and that is the only thing since 1987 that has increased in the income tax. I think that's something that I use it a lot as an example of how split sides of the process, legislative body and the executive branch, can work together very effectively.
Well, speaking of the income tax, Governor Walker says his administration is looking into at least evaluating whether it is feasible to get rid of the state's income tax. He said that a lot of states do well economically that don't have an income tax, so the idea is worth a look at for the next budget. Louis Fortas, what do you think of this idea of possibly eliminating the state income tax?
I think it's a terrible idea, and I think Pope Francis would agree with me. In the sense that what's going on here, if that happened, you would have kind of reverse Robin Hood. You would be shifting money, tax burden from the rich to the poor. I mean, the income tax is progressive, and if you earn more money, we have a big exemption at the bottom, so the income tax doesn't kick in till people are earning a reasonable amount of money, and so there is a progressivity to it. And it's based on what you earn. Now, if you shift it to, you're not going to shift it to property tax, because that is the most hated tax in the state. So no one's gonna touch that. So where else do you go? You can start. You go to the sales tax, number one, because that's the biggest, next biggest source, or probably the biggest source. And even though we have a little bit more progressive sales tax because we exempt food, and some other basic necessities, but that's a regressive tax because a poorer person, middle class and poorer, They spend almost every dollar they earn. So if you're going to be taxing consumption, which essentially is what a sales tax is, then you are basically taking a greater amount of tax per their income, a greater percentage, than you would be from wealthier folks. So what you're doing is actually reversing the progressivity of the tax. It's a terrible idea. Why not base it on ability to pay? That's what the income tax is. The income tax is, you know, if you have the ability to pay and you're making money, then pay some taxes. Because you wouldn't be making the money if you didn't have all the infrastructure that the state provides for you. So, you know, pay some taxes.
Margaret Farrell, should Wisconsin eliminate the state income tax?
Well, I think they have to take a long, hard look at it and get serious about it if they think they can. When I was in the Senate, I worked very hard. I was on joint finance, but just in my own office, and I had a staff member who was a really good economics student. You would have enjoyed him, Lou, who's now out in New York. In fact, he was pirated away by a think tank in New Jersey from me because he was so good. We did all sorts of alternatives, and another one that some are talking about are the value-added tax, such as Canada. Canada's value-added tax, or VAT tax, is 15%. Ours, it's been estimated, and this is rough. I mean, don't take it to the bank and say, oh, my word, she had her numbers wrong. But ours in Wisconsin to replace the income tax would be about 14.4%. I don't know where the sales tax would have to be pegged to accommodate it, because Wisconsin is different than many states. Wisconsin takes a lot from the local level into Madison, puts it in a bowl, mixes it up, and then sends it out on formula basis to our school districts, to our local governments, our counties, and what have you. We take more in but distribute more, because I think it's still about just below the middle 20% that stays in Madison to run state government. People are surprised often when they hear that. It's less than 25% of the total state revenue that runs state government, and that everybody, the departments and everything. So the rest comes back, and that's how Milwaukee gets 75% of their school bill paid by state school aids, which comes out of that development of funds from all these different sources. Some people pay their school bills by the sales tax in their states. Sales tax reacts immediately to a downturn in the economy, because people just can't buy as much as they did before. So we have to look at what is the steadiest. Unfortunately, and Lou's right, the property tax is, you know, one that everybody rails on. But one of the reasons is because they have to pay it as a person once a year, or in their escrow payments if they have a mortgage situation or what have you. It's the one they get closest to. And that is the most insulated from the economy, because somebody has to pay the property tax on that property, if it's a bank holding it or the property owner holding it. And so this is a huge debate. I mean, Lou and I would enjoy this discussion because we'd look at all sides of it.
We're going to have more on this issue, the possible elimination of the income tax in Wisconsin, on our state capital report on Monday from 7 until 8. This is our Week in Review, talking today with Margaret Farrow and Louis Fortas. Our Week in Review quiz is coming up next, and some other top headlines in state news. This is the Ideas Network.
Thank you to the corporate sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like the Majestic Theater, Fox City's Performing Arts Center, and Wine Guys play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can join our ever-growing list of supporters. More information at WPR.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from CTM with their signature production, A Christmas Carol, December 13th through the 23rd, a Madison family tradition at Overture Center's Capitol Theater. Details and tickets at ctmtheater.org.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9 o'clock, it's 45 North. The winter solstice marks a time of year that was sacred to our ancestors. Ann Strainchamps and her guest will celebrate the longest and darkest nights of the year with a collection of stories, dreams, and explorations to help burn the midnight oil. That's coming up on 45 North in our next hour. You're You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, and it's time now for our Week in Review quiz. Governor Walker told the Associated Press this week that his New Year's resolutions are to exercise more and to be healthier. This came right after he issued a press release with the recipe for his famous holiday treat. He also added that he can no longer eat his famous holiday treat. Why not? I'm not asking you for the holiday treat. I'm asking you, why can't Governor Walker eat his own holiday treat? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll give you 5 minutes or so to call in your answer. We'll randomly select a correct answer from all of the correct answers, and we will offer the winner a book that we featured on the program recently. So why can't Governor Walker eat his own famous holiday treat? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Talking in this edition of our Week in Review with Margaret Farrow and Louis Fortas. And let's talk about the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics releasing the news this week that Wisconsin was 37th in private sector job growth from June of 2012 to June of 2013. The state added 24,000 jobs over that year, a growth rate of 1%. The national growth rate was 1.9%. So, Margaret Farrow, how encouraging or disappointing is this news?
Well, nobody should be satisfied with it. The thing I find interesting is, except in North Dakota, nobody's growing a lot of jobs. The economy is still stumbling along. I think the whole healthcare issue is causing employers to wonder what are we going to need to hire another person in terms of the other costs than just the pay. And so we have a lot of tentative kind of toes going in the water of building more jobs. We don't have in this state as much investment dollars available. The Wisconsin Taxpayers Association reacted to our situation and said, you know, we have some of the old type industries also with old infrastructure. And, you know, our hope is, and I've had the chance to visit with my new role, which I came as a, somewhat of a surprise that I have this new responsibility on the Board of Regents. I've been visiting our universities, and I'll tell you there's an awful lot of good things happening besides making sure that our young and our non-traditional students are getting degrees. There's some great new innovations developing in product development and entrepreneurship. So I think we're growing. Are we growing fast enough? No. Is anyone? No, except the state of North Dakota. And again, we're looking at percentages. We're looking at small percentages. We are lower than Minnesota by 1.1%. They're at 2.1. We're at just under 1% or just at 1% of growth. Those aren't good numbers. They're not good numbers all the way.
Louis Fortas, you probably agree they're not good numbers?
They're not good numbers. But I think it's, I would take a little bit different slant than Margaret. First of all, you know, Margaret was saying, well, the rest of the country's not growing either. Well, they are. They're growing about twice as fast as we are, number one. They're at 1.9, we're at 1%. That is a problem.
So why is that, Louis Fortas?
Well, I think there's a lot of things going on. I think that, you know, going back to some of the decisions made in state government, I think that people are looking at Wisconsin saying, you know, what kind of state are we? People came here, entrepreneurs who set up businesses came to the, you know, we have a wonderful university system. They would graduate, they would stay here, they would develop their jobs. And Margaret's talking about the entrepreneurship going on at our university system. And I think that's great. The question is, when they see policies like this and they see state policies that they feel are kind of moving the state in the direction of Alabama or Louisiana rather than, you know, California or Massachusetts, if you want to use those two extremes. These entrepreneurs are saying, this isn't where I want to raise my children. I mean, where they're cutting back on schools and they're not respecting education and things like that. People are saying, you know, I'm going to set up this business. I have this vision. You know, let me go to a place where I want to spend the rest of my life. And it used to be Wisconsin, and Wisconsin's a great state.
And I think recently people are getting a message like, you know, this is not the Wisconsin it used to be. And I think that's one thing. I think another thing that is going on is that when you refuse, the Medicare money that's being available to the states, when you refuse the high-speed rail money, that $810 million that we gave up, that would have created a lot of jobs in the private sector. Somebody has to build this stuff. I mean, we had Talco, the Spanish train maker, come to Wisconsin, and they were going to be producing the trains in North America out of Wisconsin. And all of a sudden, when the Walker administration refused the high-speed rail money and refused to follow through on their contracts, you know, with Talco, we end up in a lawsuit. We end up having to pay them. I mean, it's we're looking like a mess.
Yeah, let me get a caller in. Dave in Mount Horeb is on the line. Hi, Dave.
I find it interesting that it took until about 10 minutes to 9 before he got to what probably most people are concerned with, and that is the economy. I also find it fascinating that the week that the bad job numbers come out, we all of a sudden talk about cutting the income tax. We talk about the mascot bill. We talk about all these other things to sort of hide the one thing that Governor Walker said he ought to be rated on. What he ought to be rated on is how the economy is doing, and the economy stinks.
So you're faulting us for talking about this now, Dave?
No. Well, but you got sucked right into what the governor wants to talk about. Well, we're going to cut the income taxes, but we don't talk, although I think Margaret talked a little bit about raising the sales tax to 14 or 15%. So we're going to cut the income tax and put it all in the sales tax, but I didn't hear just a whole lot except what Margaret's talking about is a 15% sales tax. And also, when you talk about the sales tax, when I go out and buy stocks and bonds, do I pay a sales tax? And of course, the answer is no. So the well-to-do can buy stuff that is untaxed and become wealthier, whereas the folks that are struggling, when they go out and buy perhaps food, but certainly if they buy beds and furniture and that kind of stuff, it's all taxed. It's taxed an additional 15%. That's a pretty big bite.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm confused, Dave. I thought you wanted to talk about the economic report and were mad that we weren't talking about that. Now we're talking back on taxes. But I'm going to go to Royce in Madison. Hi, Royce.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is all the money, federal money, that Governor Walker is basically refusing, which is going to other states. And the latest thing that happened this week, of course, is the continuing of rejecting the expanded Medicaid money. But, you know, you add it up, and it's almost $1 billion when you add the train money and the money for expanding broadband that we refused, and now the Medicaid money, we're talking about $109 million just for this year, and I saw in the paper that by 2022, we're talking about $1.2 billion. And, you know, this is affecting people at the bottom. I mean, I'm a senior. I have Medicare, and I have, you know, a gap policy and so forth. But it's costing me $6,000 a year just for my coverage, and I have Medicare.
Thank you very much, Royce. We're so short on time and still have some other issues that we need to get to. Louis Fortas, the state Senate did vote on that Medicaid delay this week. Talk some about whether Wisconsin did the right thing regarding Medicaid.
Well, they did the wrong thing in terms of not accepting the Medicaid. Initially, the feds are paying, you know, either 100% or 90% of the money coming into the state. You know, that Medicaid money would save all of us money, because when someone does not have health insurance and they end up in having to go to the doctor, they go to the emergency room, it costs a fortune, they can't pay the bills. That becomes charity care. Charity care is then spread out. It's what's called cost shifting. It's spread out to all the people who can pay their bills, whether it's insurance company, whether you're paying your own bill at the hospital. And as a result, we all pay more for that. This Medicaid money would have come in. It would have provided people with an opportunity to go to hospitals and actually have a primary care doctor, costs would be lower. More people would be employed, lab technicians, whatever. I mean, it's just a totally foolish thing. And the reason it's being done is not because it's good for the state of Wisconsin, but it's good for the governor's political future. He's looking at what certain people in other states who are billionaires are looking at in terms of who they're going to be writing their checks for in the Republican primary. Unfortunately, that's what's going on, and that's sad.
Yeah. Well, Margaret Farrer, do you want to respond to that?
I sure do.
Because I'm surprised.
We wouldn't have had that debate yesterday in the Senate or the one several weeks ago in the Assembly if it hadn't been a situation that the health care bill wasn't working and wasn't getting done on time and meeting deadlines and providing what it was guaranteeing it was going to do. We were told, do away with what you began in this state. You know we were front runners on the high-risk pool, the HRSA coverage of individuals who had pre-existing situations. We started that. Most of the states adopted them also. We said, they told us, the feds told us, you have to end that on January 1st. You're going to have them go on Obamacare. You're going to have them go on the new health plans. The health plans aren't ready. So suddenly, all of these things we were told to stop. We had more Medicaid coverage, more Medicare. We were the most generous state in the world, just about. But we had to stop all of what we had initiated historically because Obamacare was going to come in and solve it, and they didn't. So that's why the legislature had to do something to begin with. And then it was, well, what do we do? Buy into the federal government beginning to give us money and then suddenly saying a year from now, 2 years from now, you carry the rest of this load alone. That Medicaid is generally paid by state funds, not federal. They would get us on a program with this, and they would then say, okay, here you are, up at the top of the mountain, now jump, because we're not giving you any more money. And that has happened on a number of things, from giving communities the chance to have more police officers, getting them all on the salary, and then say, oh, that's the end of the federal dollars, now local tax dollars, you support it. And so I think we were trying to react, as I see it, what they were doing in the legislature. They were trying to react to a situation not created by us and trying to solve something for our
I have to jump in because we have less than a minute to go, and I have to congratulate Arnold in Oshkosh as our Week in Review quiz winner. We asked, why can't Governor Walker enjoy his own famous holiday treat? The holiday treat is frosted Christmas pecans, and the governor cannot enjoy them because he's allergic to nuts. Frosted pecans are a big holiday tradition in the Walker family, and we actually will post again the recipe for the Christmas frosted pecans on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So, Margaret, do you have a favorite holiday treat?
Oh, I guess I make a sugar cookie that I got out of a recipe many years ago, and our kids still love it, no matter how old we get.
My favorite, too. Lewis, how about you?
I just like the turkey dinner.
All right. Thank you both for being with us. Have a safe and happy weekend and holiday season. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you.
Lewis Fortas, former Democratic state lawmaker, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, and Margaret Farrell, former Republican lieutenant governor, currently member of the UW System Board of Regents. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
The world moves fast, and our new show, Central Time, helps you keep up. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. From breaking news to the latest in music, technology, and public debate, we're at the leading edge of what matters most.
We talk with experts and policymakers, but we also want to know what's on your mind as we celebrate the richness of Wisconsin and the people who make it great.
Join us for Central Time, weekday afternoons from 3 until 6.
Catch us right here on the